Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. It's nice to have you with us today. We're going to learn about how alpha lipoic acid supports a healthy inflammatory response in the microglial cells. In lay language, that helps people with Alzheimer's and dementia. From Kongyang University in South Korea. We have a lot more on health and healing, but today we also have a lot of insight. We're going to be sharing the latest on how corporations, the major players, are able to get we, the public, to enrich them through a corporate welfare system. And my guest will be Lisa Conyers. She is an economist, and she is going to go into these very complex economic issues, such as federal and state spending, and how we, the public, have to understand that we are paying for all of these failed trade, banking, and corporate policies, yet we're not helped. They are. So that's going to be a good segment. We'll learn a lot from that. Also, Facebook announces a ban on anything that challenges the safety and efficacy of vaccines. An article by Theodore Bunker will talk about that. The world's largest tropical wetland has become an inferno. This is from today's New York Times, from Katrin Einhorn and Maria Magnalandia and Scott Reinhardt. And you might not have heard of this. It's a wetland in Brazil. And the rainforests are in one part of Brazil, but what is called the Pantanal wetlands are in another. Now they're on fire. In fact, one of the worst fires in the history of the country. What does this mean for impacting the weather elsewhere around the planet? It does. Also today, from Gloria Dickey's article, The Arctic is in a Death Spiral. How much longer will it exist? The region is unraveling faster than anyone could have predicted, but there may be still time to act. Interesting that the New York Times just discovered that the Arctic was in a death spiral. We reported this 13 years ago and have done over 300 reports on it since, but nobody was interested. Nobody paid attention. When I was telling you we're in chaos theory and we are going to have tipping much, much faster because it's in a positive feedback loop. It's like the gigantic boulder coming down the hill. It's just picking up momentum, destroying everything in its space. I'll give you my insights on that because I can assure you I've done a lot more research on this than anyone at the New York Times or the Washington Post or anywhere else in the media. And we've been looking for the truth. Obviously, they haven't. They're a little late to the dance. Also, 5G will use the same frequencies as pain-inflicting military weapon. Health Freedom Idaho. So I'm going to talk about what is called the Active Denial System, the ADS. It's a device, and it's used in non-lethal crowd control. What do we know about it? Firing a high-powered beam of 95 gigahertz waves at a target, that is millimeter wavelengths, anyone caught in the beam will feel like their skin is burning off. Well, and that's 5G? Yeah, it operates on the same frequency. More on that. And yet they were putting up 5G everywhere. So we have a lot to share. Also, time permitting today, a brief commentary from John Whitehead on the 2020 election bamboozle. We are all victims of the deep state's con game. If not today, tomorrow on that. But we always begin with the latest on health and healing. What we have to know is that the vast majority of illnesses, cancer, diabetes, heart disease, arthritic pain, fibromyalgia, these are due in part to inflammatory responses in the body. Those in turn are directly contributed to by what we drink and eat. and the environment we live in. As a result of continuing to eat the wrong foods or the wrong beverages or breathe in polluted air, our body's cells are in constant inflammatory state. Now, normally in a 24-hour period, your cells, and there's anywhere depending upon your body size, from let's say 50 to 75 trillion cells. Some will say more. No one knows exactly, but that's a good range. You will have 10,000 gene alterations per cell. Now, based upon how much you're doing wrong by eating the pizzas, the hot dogs, the hamburgers, the meatloaves, the potato chips, the pretzels, you will either have the high end of that, 10,000 gene alterations, or if you go to a healthy diet, a healthy plant-based diet, eating clean food, organically grown, drinking healthy water, clean water, or juices, exercising, you can reduce that by 80%. Then by knowing which nutrients to take that can help protect the cell or rejuvenate the cell or grow new cells, then you can bring that down to maybe just 1,000 gene alterations, meaning you've reduced the inflammatory response, including within that the cytokine storms where there's massive amounts of inflammation, by almost 90%. Think of what that means to extending your lifespan and staying healthier longer. So add just one more piece to this very complex puzzle, and that is alpha, A-L-P-H-A, lipoic, L-I-P-O-I-C, alpha lipoic acid. And that, according to this study, will help protect the brain and help slow the chronic and progressive neurodegeneration disease that can be described by the occurrence of dementia due to the decline in cognitive functioning. The disease is characterized by the formation of extracellular and intracellular amyloid plaques. And hence, the hallmark of Alzheimer's and microglia can be activated by the presence of alpha-lipoic acid, meaning you can actually do something that can interfere in the process of your brain's degeneration. That is good news. So it's a little complicated, but I'm not going into the chemistry of it. I'm merely showing you that alpha-lipoic acid can turn down inflammation. And that's important because inflammation is one of the hallmarks of Alzheimer's disease. So one good piece of the puzzle. Another piece of the puzzle staying healthy is from a university, the Karmasha University of Medical Sciences, found that vitamin D supplementation can improve autism spectrum disorder symptoms. So most of the children with autism have deficiencies in vitamin D. This study, when vitamin D was given, it was found to impact serotonin levels and interleukin 6 in the children. So you can diminish a lot of the symptoms of Alzheimer's by making sure that you have vitamin D3 in their diets. Separately, from the University of Melbourne comes a study published in Nutrition Review showing it actually looked at a meta-analysis, meaning many different studies. And they found that simply this, if you want to maintain your muscles as you get older, over the age of 40, then you're going to have to take creatine, C-R-E-A-T-I-N-E, creatine, beta-hydroxy, beta-methylbutyrate. Well, let's make it short. HMB. It's a metabolite of the amino acid leucine. And when you take these, then you end up with more muscle mass. You could also take the branched chain amino acids that I recommend every day. I take them every day. And I always take them within 20 minutes of completing a workout. So you get and sustain your muscles. So if you want to be stronger, keep your muscles, have more strength, energy, then make sure that you're getting your amino acids and creatine each day. And that's what this is showing. Also, a very unusual study from Kumamoto University and Nagasaki Universities in Japan. I'll try to explain it without being too complicated. While building a muscle damage model in a cultural system, a group of these two university research scientists in Japan has found that components leaking from broken muscle fibers, let's say you do a workout, or you're just getting older, and your muscles begin to break down, those muscle fibers actually activate what are now called satellite muscle stem cells. And while trying to identify the proteins that activate these satellite cells, they found that metabolic enzymes, such as GAPDH, rapidly activated dormant satellite cells and accelerated muscle injury regeneration. That's magnificent because it shows a highly rational and efficient regeneration mechanism in which the damaged muscle itself activates the satellite cells to begin the regeneration process. A little deeper on this, skeletal muscle is made up of bundles of contracting muscle fibers, and each muscle fiber is surrounded by satellite cells. So muscle cells, stem cells, they can produce new muscle fibers, are a part of that. And thanks to the work of these satellite cells, muscle fibers can be regenerated even after being bruised or torn during extreme intense exercise. And satellite cells also play essential roles in muscle growth during developmental stages, like when you're young and a teenager, and muscle hypertrophy during strength training, where you're really building the muscle. However, in refractory muscle diseases like muscular dystrophy and age-related macular fragility, sarcopenia, the number and function of these satellite cells decreases. It is therefore important to understand that regulatory mechanisms of satellite cells muscle regeneration therapy. In a mature muscle, skeletal muscle cell, satellite cells are usually present in a dormant state. But upon stimulation after muscle injury, satellite cells are rapidly activated and proliferate repeatedly. And during the subsequent myogenesis, they differentiate and regenerate muscle fibers by fusing with existing muscle fibers or with together. And of these three steps, the satellite cell activation, the proliferation, and muscle differentiation, little is known about how the first step activation is induced, but it happens. So in just lay language, your body is so intelligent. There is such a magnificent design that as you damage a cell, the cell that is being damaged sends out messages. The messages then activate these dormant, in some cases dormant, stem cells of muscle, and then they begin to immediately regenerate and bind to the damaged cell to repair it and even add new muscle. Just one of the ideas that lets us know that as much as we know, there's a whole lot more we don't, but that's just the miracle of life in the body. From the Pontifical Catholic University in Chile, an article published in Frontiers Neuroscience shows that musical training can improve attention and working memory in children. Neuroscientists have found a new group of evidence-based study that learning to play an instrument is really good for your brain. Musically trained children perform better at attention and memory recall and have greater activation in brain regions related to attention control and auditory encoding and executive functions known to be associated with improving reading and higher resilience and greater creativity and a better quality of life. Well, shouldn't that also apply to older people? And lo and behold, it does as well. Young or old, that's important. University of California at Irvine found that cannabis is a better way of dealing with sickle cell disease pain than the different types of opiates, pain relievers. So this was a double-blind, placebo-controlled study. And by the way, just sickle cell anemia is a genetic condition inherited at birth that causes normally round red blood cells to take on crescent moon shape or a sickle, a defect that leads to rapid cell die-off and a shortage of healthy red blood cells in the body. And the most common clinical manifestations of sickle cell disease are vaso-occlusive crisis, periods when the microcirculation is obstructed, resulting in chronic pain. The only known cure for sickle cell disease is a bone marrow or stem cell transplant, making pain management a top priority. And opiate pain medications, the current primary treatment, unfortunately, have really bad, serious downside effects. Not just constipation and not just itching and respiratory depression, but the risk of addiction and death. In fact, last year, now I don't believe the figures are conclusive, but the best figures I can find were upwards of 60,000, though I saw a report that 80,000 died by using opiates last year. That means more died in 1 year from pain medication than died in the Vietnam War. That shows you that we should be looking at all safe and effective natural treatments, and cannabis just happens to be one of those. I'm Gary Nall. We are 18 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, I'm going to go to a segment last night on Tucker Carlson, where he had a former New York Times reporter giving us the latest information on why aren't they ever discussing the downside of wearing masks when the evidence is very strong that there are serious complications, especially for people who are in hospital or in critical care or who have emphysema, where they can actually die from the consequences of wearing the masks and all the molds and other things that are occurring. So, yes, there's evidence for masks, and yes, there's also evidence opposing masks. I've given you my point of view, but I think it's important you hear this because this is brand new information. And also, we're going to hear about a study that was not released that was supposed to be the world's most important study. Why wasn't it released? Because if it was positive and showed that masks work, it would have been headline news. So why wasn't it released? Back in a moment with that segment, with that reporter.
A lot about this subject. He's the author of Unreported Truths About COVID-19 and Lockdowns Part 2, Updated Examinations of Lockdowns as a Strategy. Worth reading. He joins us tonight. Alex, thanks so much for coming on. So this study from the CDC does seem like big news to me. At the very least, my quick and dirty read is what we're doing isn't working. Why has this not received any coverage?
Well, it hasn't received coverage because the media doesn't want to cover anything, you know, aside from you and a few other people, don't want to cover anything that says that masks might not be, you know, God's gift to all of us. But I will say this, it's one study, it's what's called a case-controlled study. So what happened is they looked at the 160 people who had gotten the virus and they compared them to essentially a control group of 160 people who hadn't gotten the virus.
Yes.
And essentially the mask wearing was exactly the same in both arms. So that suggests that masks provided no benefit, at least
right.
in this study. And if, for example, you look at the people who were close to people with a known case of the coronavirus, many more of those people in the arm of people who got the virus were close to somebody who had the virus. It was like 42% versus 14%. So that's what you would expect, right? You're close to somebody who has the virus, you're more likely to get the virus. In this case, masks seem to provide no difference between the two arms. That's just one study, but it is telling. Here's what I'll say. There's a very big study, a randomized controlled trial out of Denmark that was finished in June that was supposed to demonstrate whether or not masks worked for protecting the wearer from infection. So several thousand people were going to wear masks, several thousand people not wear masks. You compare at the end who was infected, who wasn't. That study was finished in June. It was supposed to be published in August. It has disappeared. There has been no publication of the results. I don't know what the study says, but I think it's reasonable to speculate that if the study showed that masks worked, every scientific journal in the world would want to print it. And this is part of a much bigger problem, Tucker. The problem is that science and scientists who are outside what the public health authorities and the media want are being almost systematically shut down. And this came up in the discussion about herd immunity, where a very good scientist in the UK couldn't get a paper published suggesting that herd immunity she couldn't get it published in a journal suggesting that, you know, we might reach herd immunity at much lower rates of infection than the 50 to 70% that people have speculated. This and you're seeing this with the Great Barrington Declaration, too, which I know you've talked about. We know about that the scientists who published that, who are very, very well known, who are at Stanford and Oxford and Harvard, who have sterling credentials, are being tarred and feathered by other scientists. I don't understand what has happened to scientific debate, not just in this country, but around the world, where if you have an opinion, a well-backed, a well-researched opinion that's outside the consensus, you can't get it published in a major journal.
Well, that's just witchcraft, isn't it? I mean, at that point, that's not science, right?
I mean, science should be a discussion, and it should be.
Yes.
And you see this in yet another way, Tucker, which is that people who've published studies, who actually the authors of studies showing that masks are ineffective, or who've written articles saying, you know, there was this article in the New England Journal of Medicine at the beginning of April, and it essentially said universal masking is ineffective, probably. It is essentially a sop to the public's fears. The people who wrote that article walked back that conclusion, which was extremely clear 2 months later. So what kind of pressure was put on them, or what kind of pressure are they putting on themselves? Science is not going to work if scientists are censoring themselves or censoring other scientists. And that seems to be where we're going right now.
It's frightening. You're one of the very few standing in the face of that. Good luck. Alex Berenson, good to see you tonight.
So that means that there's a major study, high-quality study, showing that two groups of people, one who wore the mask constantly, the others who did not, and they both had the same rate of infection, being around people who themselves were infected, therefore showing there was no benefit to the mask. That's one study. But then I want to show you some other studies. There's a Dr. Sukardit Bhakti, and he was a former chairman of medical microbiology at the University of Mainz in Germany. He was also the postdoctoral fellow at the Max Planck Institute of Immunology, Immunobiology, and Epigenetics, meaning he is one of the most respected scientists in the world and an expert in this field. He studied all of the pros and cons on masks, looked at all the studies, because they're both. And originally, at the start of the pandemic, the World Health Organization stated that general wearing a mask did not serve any purpose. And that was based upon their scientific review committee. And they were reviewing the same studies that Dr. Bhakti had reviewed. And mind you, these were only peer-reviewed scientific studies. So why did they say the same thing and then change their mind? In point of fact, according to Dr. Bhakti, there is no scientific evidence that can reach a medical consensus that a symptom-free person without a cough or fever can spread the virus. So if that's the case, why do we have lockdowns of otherwise healthy people? Think of all the children, teenagers, young adults. Think of all the healthy people. You're talking about tens of millions, if not over 100 million people in the United States alone. They should never have been locked up. They should have been allowed to go to work. They should have been allowed to carry on life, as was the case in Sweden. And now we see that there's almost no deaths in Sweden. And the original high peak of deaths in Sweden was due to what I considered a poorly informed policy, meaning they decided not to treat people who were at the end stage of a morbid condition. Let's say you were 80 years old, you were in a nursing home, you had heart failure, they were not going to treat you. So all those people died, huge number of people died, 14% of all the people in these care centers died. That's a large number, hence the spike, because they wanted their hospital and emergency rooms and chronic care or acute care available for younger people whose lives were ahead of them. They were pragmatists in this. I would have been more humanistic because you could help both, but they didn't. We didn't do it in the United States either. And as a result, now it's come down and it's flattened out, meaning there's almost no deaths. One death per day, one death every other day, two deaths here. They're normal death cycles, nothing unusual. We didn't learn from any of this. And then we started these draconian measures. Do they work? And that is the whole point. Well, masks do not and cannot protect from infection nor give any hope in stopping the spreading of the virus, according to Dr. Bacotti, based on the peer-reviewed literature. Why? Cotton surgical masks have been associated with a higher risk of penetration of microorganisms. In fact, as much as 97% penetration. Moisture retention, reuse of cloth masks, poor filtration all contribute to an increased risk of infections. And one of the major scientific papers supporting the efficacy of masks by the Institute of Labor Economics has discovered a fundamentally flawed study, yet is still being cited by governments to support mask wearing, yet it's been completely discredited. One of the major papers supporting the efficacy of masks also had the same thing. First, they say they work, but now upon closer examination, it doesn't. So if the science clearly questions the need for masks, and there are a lot of studies showing that they do not work to prevent this virus, or for that matter, other viruses, but they do protect from large particulate matter from escaping from a sneeze or a cough, then there are those who will say wear the mask, others say not. I say look at the peer-reviewed science and decide for yourself, because, and this is according to Dr. the scientist, one of the foremost in the world, quote, there are many other studies supporting mask inefficiency going back a couple of decades. Then the question is, why are they being mandated throughout the U.S. and other countries? And he says he only has one conclusion: to foster continued fear in the population. My personal opinion, a mask now serves as a social cipher. It has become a magical glyph, a propaganda that serves as a constant reminder to the person wearing a mask that there is this hidden enemy out there, and everyone you meet carries the potential to infect. It is a fabricated subconscious meme of psychological manipulation in order to sustain a level of quiet and repressed panic in the public psyche throughout the population in order for other agendas to be rolled out. A later study we are doing on the Great Reset will bring more of this to light. But when I travel, I wear two masks. One is an N99, the most filter-proof mask there is, and then over that is a shield. When I'm on a plane, you bet. But I also wear an ionizer, and I practice proper hygiene, and always washing hands, and do social distancing, because this is not just for COVID-19, but for all other possible infections that could be prevented. But that's for you to decide. But just understand something. You've been lied to by the government and by the media. You have not been shown the full picture, the pros and the cons of wearing masks. And there's a lot on both sides. Now, We're going to go to our guest in a few moments, but I want to bring you up to date on a few other issues that are also important that are not being addressed, in my opinion, in the general media. The first of these has to do with Facebook. According to Newsmax, Theodore Bung getting a vaccine is part of a series of policy changes targeting misinformation on social media platforms. The company's head of health, Kang Jin, and director of product management, Rob Lerthern, wrote in a post that Facebook will now reject an ad if it, quote, explicitly discourages someone from getting a vaccine. But it goes beyond that. It means if you question vaccines, their safety and efficacy, even if you are using peer-reviewed scientific papers showing the dangers of aluminum as an adjuvant or formaldehyde or aborted fetal cells and what that will do to your own body's immune system, they're scrubbing everything. The only discussion, articles, ads on Facebook will now be pro-vaccine, pro-5G, pro-genetically engineered foods, pro-pesticides. Everything that corporate America is manufacturing or pushing is pro-Facebook and pro-Google and pro-Wikipedia. If you challenge anything, anything, no matter what proof and science and truth you have, it is rejected. So just understand, walk away from Facebook. I have. I don't have an account with them anymore. I had 7 million people each day tuning into my Facebook. 7 million. I saw the numbers every day. And I said, no. No, I'm not going to be on this fascistic, evil platform. No. I don't care if there were 100 million people. Those numbers are meaningless. What's important is take that message to a meaningful place. Now I post everything on PRN.fm and other sites, other, you know, Truth Dig and global, the global networks. There are at least 200 good sites out there that you can post on. They don't have all the views, but at least it's not censored. And it's not ideological based. Global Research is one of the best. Also, the world's largest tropical wetland has become an inferno, according to an article in yesterday's New York Times. Quote, this year, roughly a quarter of the vast Pantanal wetland in Brazil, one of the most biodiverse places on Earth, has burned in wildfires worsened by climate change. What happens to a rich and unique biome when so much is destroyed? The unprecedented fires in the wetland have attracted less attention than blazes in Australia, the western United States, and the Amazon, its celebrity sibling to the north. But while the Pantanal is not a global household name, horse flock there because of what they see, jaguars, tapirs, endangered giant otters, and great blue hyacinth macaws. And like a vast tub, the wetland swells with water during rainy season and empties out during the dry months. Fittingly, this rhythm has a name that evokes the beating heart, the flood pulse. Well, that's all changing. Now, they talk about the problem here in the New York Times. They don't talk about the solution. The solution is to have a worldwide boycott of the president and his policies from Brazil. Stop selling stuff to Brazil. Stop buying stuff from Brazil. Stop eating meat, because that's why they're tearing down these rainforests to grow soybeans to feed to livestock so China can have its continued terrible diet. By the way, China's life expectancy is one of the lowest in the world, as is the United States. And I believe we're 43rd now, some terrible number. We're way down now. We're dropping into the 70s in life expectancy, around 70 years of age, where other countries, 84, 86 years of age. That means that if you're in Singapore, if you're in Japan, you could be living, at least between 6 to 10 longer years than if you're in the United States. That's ridiculous. but it's based upon our poor choices. So you would have to take on corporate America. You'd have to take on all the fast food chains. You'd have to take on Burger King and McDonald's. You'd have to take on all the restaurants that sell the steaks, all the ads on television. You'd have to take on the products that are made from the rainforest destruction. And I don't see that being done. So, and finally, the Arctic is in a death spiral. Quote from Gloria Dickey, New York Times yesterday. At the end of July, 40% of the 4,000-year-old Milne ice shelf located on the northwestern edge of Ellesmere Island calved, meaning it broke off into the sea. Canada's last fully intact ice shelf was no more. On the other side of the island, the most northerly in Canada, the St. Patrick's Bay ice caps completely disappeared. 2 weeks later, scientists concluded that Greenland's ice sheet may have already passed the point of no return. Annual snowfall is no longer enough to replenish the snow and ice loss during summer melting of the territory's 234 glaciers. Last year, the ice sheet lost a record amount of ice equivalent to 1 million metric tons per 60 seconds. The Arctic is unraveling, and it's happening faster than anyone could have imagined just a few decades ago. Well, we imagined, and we warned you. We're saying that only when we as individuals, we as groups, and we as a nation change our lifestyles and stop buying things that require the environment to be destroyed and its resources exploited, that is the only choice we have. Technology will not save us at this point, no matter what they promise you. That's our environmental update. More to come on that in the next day or two. Before we go to our guest in just a moment, just want to mention that we have a special today. I was just sent this special, and it's a really phenomenal special. It's a $153.93 special, and it's yours for $84. You're saving amounts to approximately $69. It's vitamin C, the Suprema C Extra. That's the 240 vegan capsules with the natural ascorbates from acerola and amla berries and the fat-soluble vitamin C and a synergistic combination of bioflavonoids and phytonutrient-rich red fruits. It's one of the most advanced, if not the most advanced, vitamin C out there. So you're getting that. You're getting the best of the best with the Suprema C Extra. That's one thing you're getting. But you're also getting the DVD that you have not seen, How to Add Healthy Years to Your Life. And we normally think aging is a natural, inevitable, and irreversible process. And for many people, it is. But I'm working now to show that we can prevent heart disease, diabetes, dementia, memory loss, and other illnesses that are not normal biological processes, but are artificial. And how do we do that? This gives you the protocols and programs of how to add those years to your life. And finally, I'm giving you today, as a gift, Living in the Moment, A Prescription for the Soul. This is the most reflective book I've ever written. And it is deep in the thought of what we have to do at the spiritual level of bringing our life up to a higher standard, living a larger life based upon enlightenment, and gives you the tools that you can use to achieve this balance, increasing self-esteem, personal discipline, focus, and to know who you are. It's an extremely passionate book. It's called Living in the Moment, A Prescription for the Soul, and it's the most important book I've written on the topic. So how do you get this wonderful package, Supremacy Extra, 240 vegan capsules, How to Add Healthy Years to Your Life, the DVD, and Living in the Moment, the book? You're going to dial a number. You're going to call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. And all the proceeds will go to support this radio station. 877-627-5065. 5065. This is a wonderful, one-of-a-kind package. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Lisa Conyers is an important voice as an economist and as a person who tries to take very complex economic issues at the federal state level of how we spend our money. We, the people, have almost no say-so in it. We think we do, we don't. And for the general public, that's important because we're told repeatedly by administration after administration, if it's the Bush administration, the Reagan administration, the Ford administration, and the Trump administration, and the Republicans or conservatives, that, you know, laissez-faire, let the market dictate. If you fail, then you fail. And then it teaches you a lesson, reorganize, go through bankruptcy. Okay, but then why can't they apply the same system to the military-industrial complex, to General Electric, to General Motors, to all the thousands of companies, the banks, who failed, repeatedly failed, and yet are constantly bailed out with our money? That's corporate welfare by any stretch of the imagination they are engaged in, and they're smiling all the way to the bank. Lisa, I gave our audience your biographical background earlier in the program. By the way, she holds degrees from American Studies from George Mason University, and also a master's in business management, University of Maryland. Her website is welfareforthe.rich.com. Nice to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
Lisa, for over a decade, we have witnessed an enormous chunk of wealth being funneled to the rich and powerful at the expense of the struggles of the average citizen. And although this trend has been with us for decades, it was largely after the Bush-Obama bailout during the recession and again more Trump administration that the inequality gap has increased exponentially. The real criminal tenor behind this trend is sadly, it's legal. The rich and major corporations act within the rules and simply know how to take the maximum advantage in its inherent flaws. And there are many different avenues and means by which wealthy corporations bilk the public tax dollars. One of the biggest complaints has been government subsidies. An earlier Cato study estimated that over $100 billion minimally is spent every year to subsidize corporations. My figures put it at $350 billion. Today, that figure would be much higher. In addition, there are other corporate welfare schemes such as grants, tax credits, loan guarantees, price reductions, and payouts. So I'd like for you to take your time and address how the subsidy schemes operate, because this seems to be the larger bulk of where our tax dollars go and which industries receive the largest chunk of federal subsidies. Then please lay out for us the larger picture to describe the system of corporate welfare. The forum is yours.
Oh, well, thank you, Gary. As you mentioned, this has been going on for a long time, and it does seem to be growing exponentially. And Phil Harvey and I, my co-author, were really surprised to discover how vast this system really is. I think many people think they know a little bit about corporate welfare in one field or another, whether it's agricultural subsidies or zoning or taxes. But as we discovered as we wrote this book, the problem is enormous. And we kept having to add chapters to the book. Just when we thought we had covered everything, we discovered yet another industry or area of American economy that is affected by this. So we started the book. Our first chapter is all about the agricultural subsidy system in this country, which is sort of founded on the idea that we should support the little guy out on the family farm. And, you know, it's important to support these farmers that are under such, you know, threats from weather and things like that. But the agricultural system today is just an enormous giveaway to the rich. The average farmer in America makes twice what the average American makes. Many millionaire farmers receive heavy subsidies from the Farm Bill. And what's really striking about it and depressing, frankly, is that we subsidize through the Farm Bill some of the worst crops for us. I was listening to your show while you were talking a few minutes ago about health and what we consume as consumers. And what's sad is that the Farm Bill does not support the healthiest food crops, for example. So not only are we taking our tax dollars and giving them to rich people, but we're giving them to rich people to grow crops that aren't good for us, as opposed to fruits and vegetables and things like that are not subsidized. It's very hard for a small farmer trying to raise organic, you know, food or anything that's healthier for you. So those are the kinds of things that we found most frustrating as we looked at this, is that so often not only are we giving this money to people, but we're giving them that money and then they're doing things that are against our interests as taxpayers. So the agricultural subsidies are one of them. We looked at tariffs and discovered that in many cases tariffs that are imposed, especially under this administration, are very haphazard and tend to favor one industry over another, or one owner of one company against other players in the same field. So as you mentioned, you know, people like to argue, well, you know, let the free market do its thing and everything will turn out okay. And these large corporations and wealthy individuals would like you to believe that they are playing on this open playing field, but they really aren't. They're taking advantage of these subsidies to get ahead. And that is very, goes against free market principles. So it's kind of interesting to see people as wealthy as Bill Gates and Warren Buffett say, oh yeah, we take subsidies because they're available. And as long as you give them to us, we're going to keep taking them. So they don't seem to see any problem with that. But at the same time, they'll tell you that they pulled themselves up by their bootstraps and, you know, made their way as capitalists in America. So there are a lot of topics in the book. We cover things like the stadiums. Around the country, professional sports stadiums are costing local taxpayers and state taxpayers billions of dollars. And as we all know, professional sports team owners are very, very wealthy individuals. And yet they manage to go to city after city demanding stadiums and demanding that the local taxpayers pay for them. So again, it's somebody who's very wealthy, doesn't need the money, and takes it anyway. So I think that what you can learn from, you know, looking at these topics, you know, we talk about zoning, we talk about the energy industry and how much money we give to the energy industry. And the sort of overarching theme through all of it is this sort of movement by those who are wealthy to say, hey, wait a minute, now that I'm wealthy, I can lobby and I can use my lawyers and get these special favors to make myself even wealthier. And it's not through their hard work. It's not through products that they're selling. It's through basically taking advantage of all of us who pay our taxes. And we certainly aren't wealthy, but the money that we're, you know, putting into state and federal coffers is ending up in the pockets of very wealthy people. So
give us more egregious and perhaps ridiculous examples of corporate subsidies and tax dollar payouts that you've encountered in your research, and some examples that should outrage listeners, because in the meantime, the infrastructure in our cities and towns are collapsing. We're not spending a penny to help revitalize all of the ghettoized areas of America. And poverty is on the rise, and our healthcare system is a laughingstock for other developed nations.
Mm-hmm. Well, for example, when you talk about, you know, cities, one of the most interesting things that I discovered when we were looking at zoning was how many cities in America, especially those, you know, San Francisco, you'd like to believe that San Francisco is this very, you know, left-leaning city, and yet it has some of the most egregious zoning laws that have been put into place by people who want to protect their property values and basically shut out the ability to, you know, increase the density of housing and allow for example, those tiny homes and mother-in-law apartments and all that kind of stuff. And oftentimes it's wealthy players who go into and lobby for regulations that prevent that kind of thing from happening. And I've found that it isn't people who lean politically one way or another, it has more to do with those who are wealthy and those who aren't. And it really is an issue of inequality. And it's very hard to change those rules once they're in place, because, you know, you have to go through the zoning department and it's very, very complicated. And the average person who just wants to add a little apartment in the backyard for grandma is not going to be allowed to do it, or to rent it out to students or whatever the case may be. So rents in big cities like San Francisco, Washington, D.C., New York are just outrageously high. And a lot of it has to do with the zoning problem. So that, you know, that's one that I think was pretty shocking for us. The stadium one, as I mentioned, there was a town in Hartford, Connecticut that built a stadium for a baseball team. And the city is now basically running a deficit equal to the amount of money that they spent on that stadium. And the owner of the team was very wealthy and could have been building that stadium on his own dime and chose not to. So, and yet it doesn't have to be that way. There's a, you know, stadium in San Francisco that was built that hosted the 2016 Super Bowl that was built entirely with private money, $1.3 billion stadium, and the voters of San Francisco didn't have to pay for it. Meanwhile, we have a $2 billion stadium that's being built in Las Vegas right now that is heavily subsidized by the taxpayers of Las Vegas and Nevada. And that's going to be the most expensive, you know, sports stadium in history. And the owners are multimillionaires, if not billionaires, and yet they've managed to convince the taxpayers that they need to pay for this huge, you know, stadium. So those are the kinds of examples that we came across. I traveled around the country for 4 years looking for stories for this book, and I stumbled along, you know, across things like that everywhere I went. Down in Louisiana, probably one of the better success stories that I came across was there was a group of citizens that were looking at the USA Today newspaper rankings of the states. So every year, USA Today ranks all the states in terms of healthcare, education, you know, public services and all that. And Louisiana keeps landing at the bottom of that list. And local activists looked at that and said, well, how can that be? We're such a wealthy state. We have you know, just a massive amount of natural resources. We have the oil along the Gulf. What can possibly be going on? And what they discovered was that there was a tiny little commission that nobody had ever heard of that was rubber stamping requests from large corporations to be exempt from property taxes. And this committee has been around for decades. And so all of those big energy companies that you see along the Gulf, Exxon, Mobil, Alcoa, Dow, they are all exempt from paying property taxes. Well, we're talking billions and billions of property taxes that were not paid because these guys had lobbied and said, hey, we want to be exempt from paying property taxes because we're bringing jobs to your state. And these citizens said, well, that's just not okay. Look at our schools. Look at everything. Look at all that, what we could have done with that money if those guys had just paid their fair share. And so they created an organization called Together Louisiana, and they started attending public meetings, and they you know, raised awareness through social media and all that, and they managed to get the law changed last year. So those organizations can no longer just go in and ask for that rubber stamp. They have to actually present their case to local school districts and fire departments and police departments and say, hey, we don't want to pay property taxes. Can you give us an exemption? And so I'm pretty excited by that. That was probably, and it's been a success so far. I mean, they now have to go through this process. We'll see how it goes long term. But the fact that that existed for, you know, decades in Louisiana without anybody noticing is pretty shocking. And that's the kind of stuff that happens, is that some little committee is created or some little special law is written for one individual and then everybody forgets about it. But it can have huge consequences.
Well, good. Well, I appreciate you sharing these insights with us. And let's not forget the largest, one of the largest of all welfare recipients is the military-industrial complex, where we pay for so much of their research, and then they privatize how they sell it and then take the profits for themselves. So we pay for their losses, they keep their gains. That is a terrible rule to work from, And I think that we just have to become aware of a problem before we can change it. I want to thank you very much, Lisa Conyers, for being on today. And Lisa's book that highlights all of this is available, and it's called Welfare for the Rich, How Your Tax Dollars End Up in Millionaires' Pockets and What You Can Do About It. Her website is welfareforthe.rich.com. Thank you for being on with us today, Lisa.
Oh, thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
More to come on that topic on upcoming programs. Just a couple quick program announcements. This coming weekend, this Sunday, the 18th, at noon, I'm going to be doing a live webinar on managing pain naturally. Every kind of pain you can imagine, we'll be showing a documentary. I'll be doing a detailed discussion lecture with protocols. I'll be taking questions and answers. I don't know how long it'll last, sometimes 3 hours, sometimes 6 hours. But boy, everybody gets their questions addressed, and you get a lot of information. Call this number if you'd like to attend. Let's see, what is the number? 877-627-5065. This Sunday, noon, on how to eliminate pain and prevent pain naturally. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. And finally, today, I wanted to read an open letter. I received this letter from a person in South America. And it was about how the world leaders were sent an Ecuadorian indigenous leader, Namati Nimquino. And it was entitled, Your Civilization is Killing Life on Earth. And it starts, Dear Presidents of the 9 Amazonian countries and to all world leaders that share responsibility for the plundering of our rainforest. And then it goes through her as a woman, a mother, a leader of her people, talking about the rainforest. It's their home and what all these corporations have done to exploit it. That letter I will read in its entirety on tomorrow's program, because we are a platform, we are a voice for indigenous cultures, those who have been repressed, suppressed, those who have been blocked, denied, or in any way adversely affected from their quality of life. So tomorrow, an open letter to world leaders from Ecuadorian indigenous leader, Namati Nimquino. Have a nice day, everyone.